This is Sid Taylor, who is going to talk about his life and Tomoana Freezing Works, or Meat Works. I'm not sure if it's both. Anyway, Sid, over to you. How long have you lived in Hawke's Bay?
I've lived in Hawke's Bay for 78 years. I'll read this about me. I was born in Remuera, Auckland, on the 2nd of November 1936 to Adelaide and Charles Taylor. Alice Taylor, my sister, was born in Remuera on the 5th of April 1932. In 1937, Adelaide and Charles, mum and dad, moved to Hastings and in 1938 bought the Jervis Street store and remained there until they sold it to Alice and Robert Weeds in 1949 and moved to their new home in 916 North Nelson Street until their deaths, with Dad on the 5th of February 1979 and Mum on the 2nd of June 1982. Incidentally, Alice and Robert Weeds, Alice was my mother's sister, Alice Jones. I was brought up in Jervois Street. The store was on the Willow Park Road corner and in the midst of the railway houses and the surrounding area. My sister Alice was being educated at Mahora School. I was also enrolled at Mahora to receive my primary education. My teacher in Primer 1 was Miss Satchell, the Standard 1, Mrs. Wills. Mrs. Wills also taught my first children in Standard 1 in Mayfair School many years later. Another teacher I remember from Standard 5 and 6 was Mr. Harry Corns. Our headmaster during those years was Mr. Engelbretson. In our last 2 years at primary, Standard 5 and 6, one afternoon each week was spent at technical training, tech, in the manual training centre at the central school. This necessitated a push bike ride every Wednesday afternoon, where the girls carried out cooking lessons and the boys took woodworking courses. Other memories of my Hora days with half pint bottles of milk in the mornings and apples in the fruit season. There was also the gardening, where we had garden plots at home, grown vegetables, and these plots were judged. I received a merit certificate in 1946, a second in 1947, and a third in 1948. Also during those years, I learned to play the piano, taking lessons from the sisters at the Hastings Convent, gaining passes in the Royal Schools of Music and pianoforte playing. When I started my secondary education in Hastings High School in 1951, I enrolled in commercial practice subjects and passed these for my school certificate in 1952. During my high school years, I worked after school in the afternoons at the post office, delivering telegrams on pushbike. It was this fifth form year that I had to make the decision on my future employment. I felt I had to choose between the future and a bank, a government department, or office work at the Freezing Works. In the August school holidays, I decided on the Freezing Works and applied for a job in the office at the Tomoana Freezing Works. The secretary, Mr. Charlie Hild, wanted me to start immediately, but I advised him I wanted to get my school certificate first. So I started as office junior at Tomoana on the 15th of November 1952. At a pay rate of £3.11 shillings and tuppence per week, and paid Mum 10 shillings board. As office junior, I was required to start the day by pushbiking to the post office and clearing the mail and return to the Tomoana office, sorting the mail and delivering it to the various departments. After that, various jobs were carried out in the office, and at noon, I would bike home for lunch, and at 1 o'clock, bike to town with the day's banking of cash and cheques in a satchel and deposit this at the bank. Carry out other messages in town, then bike back to the office. The rest of the afternoon would be filing, folding mail into envelopes and stamp, entering individual details in the postages book. After 5 p.m, when the mail was ready for posting, another trip on the push bike to the post office to post the mail, leaving the bag there for next morning's mail, and back home for the day. This routine was carried out for 4 days, but on a Friday it would start at 8 a.m. with a bike ride to all the Hastings butcher shops to collect payments from the butchers for all their killing fees and meat purchases for the previous week. There were 13 butchers and payments were mainly cheques, but a few would pay in cash. It was 12 months after my first meeting that I was greeted by my successor at the post office. After a week of teaching the new office junior, I was promoted to the records department. This job recording particulars of classes, grades and weights and daily kills, shipments and stock left on hand. It was later that I got involved with the financial side of the stocks. In September 1953, I joined the Tomona Freezing Works Industrial Fire Brigade. This was a family tradition. My grandfather and my father joined the Ellerslie Brigades in September 1932. And when Dad shifted to Hastings, Dad was involved with the formation of the Whakatū Freezing Works Industrial Brigade. But when my eldest son, Martin, started work in Hastings, he joined the Hastings Volunteer Brigade. His job took him to Taupo and he joined the Taupo Volunteer Fire Brigade. From there he went to Auckland and joined up with the Titirangi Brigade. My youngest son, Richard, joined the Heretonga Rural Fire Brigade in Hastings and is still a current member there. I was a member of the Tomona Fire Brigade until I was made redundant at Tomona in 1993. During my 31 years in the Tomona Fire Brigade, I went through the ranks to Chief Fire Officer. In those years, I was elected to the Hawke's Bay Fire Brigade Sub-Association and the Wellington Provincial Fire Brigade Association and achieved the office of President in both of these associations. In 1978, I was presented with my 25-year Gold Star. It was in 1955 that, because of my age, I was co-opted to the CMT, compulsory military training, and spent my initial training in the Linton military camp, doing my basic training there, then my core training as a cook. What an experience. My first annual camp was in 1956. I was attached to the 4th Armoured Corps at the Bargoosh Satellite Camp out of Wairuru. My military rank and number was Trooper Taylor, 579-416.
How long did the camp last?
It was a 2-week camp, they were.
And did you then join the territorials at all?
No, the original camp was 2 months, I think it was. Yeah. And then they had the annual camps. It was in the Corps training. That's when I was trained as a cook and attached to the 4th Armoured Regiment. Yes. Also at Tomona, I joined up with the Tomona Players, which was a theatrical group performing to raise funds for school organisations. This group originated during the war years to raise funds for patriotic groups and then on to school groups performing in Hastings, Napier, Waipawa, Waipakarau and Dannevirke. The first play I was in was A Pirate, and Ambrose Applejohn's Adventures. The following year I had a major role in Love's a Luxury. The following years I was backstage and ended up as stage manager. This experience led me to the Hastings Musical Comedy Company, making scenery for them and backstage, eventually to stage manager there also.
And did you have many others helping you make the stage decorations?
The scenery, yes, we had working people. The Hastings Musical Comedy Hall was in Davis Street, and after I had retired from there, some years later, I was involved with Theatre Hawke's Bay, assisting with the properties for the society in the Theatre Hawke's Bay Theatre in the old Finney's Bakery building in Hastings Street, and retired there approximately 2014. Back to the Tomona years. In 1980, I was promoted to office manager, and after the takeover of Whakatū Works, my official title became administration manager. In 1960, I married Judith Dixon and had 3 daughters and 1 son. We purchased a section on Tudor Avenue and built our home. Following the divorce, I remarried in 1979 to Catherine Young and had 1 son. 79 was a year to remember. Not only did I remarry, but there was a major fire at Tomona. Of course, I was involved with the fighting of the blaze, but when the ashes had settled, I had a job of assisting with the major loss of profits insurance claim. This loss of profits covered for a 12-month period and resulted in a major payout in December 1980. The insurance companies involved were also involved with the Mount Erebus disaster. Not a good year for them. In 1993, I was made redundant at Timona and purchased with my wife Catherine Premier Fire Security. This was a small business selling and servicing fire extinguishers. Situated in Kerimi Road and employing one salesman serviceman, we carried out the servicing of fire extinguishers and hose reels for many Hastings and Central Hawke's Bay businesses. Kath looked after the administration side of the venture, and we eventually sold the business to Fire Security Services in 2009.
And is it still going?
Yes, it's still operating. It's now in Merikokohu Road, just past the fire
station. And is it still called the same?
No, I think it's now, well, it went to Fire Security Services. I think it might still be called Fire Security Services. In 1998, we purchased a section in Amanda Place and built our new family home there and remained there until 2011, when we shifted into Somerset in the Orchard. Our townhouse in Somerset was a two-storied unit, and when we shifted in there, only a portion of the townhouses on the northern side of the stream had been completed. It was very interesting watching the contractors work and experience the transformation of the village. We were able to follow the construction of the community centre and the bowling green and the road, Blossom Avenue, onto the runway and finally the pavilion. We are all very lucky residents to have such wonderful facilities.
To go back, when you were doing the mail first at Timona, did you have to stamp every letter or did you have a franking machine?
We had a franking machine.
And at that stage, can you remember how much the postage was?
I think it was every time the franking machine had used a certain amount of money, I can't remember the exact total, I would have to put that franking machine on the bag and use my push bike to go up to the post office with a cheque to pay for the next lot.
And would that be, say, every 2 months?
No, I think it would be about every month, because, as you can appreciate, all the mail went out with the killing reports. Every client's stock that was killed, there'd been an export works, there's a lot of stock.
And would you be sending stuff overseas as well, the bills and everything?
No, most of the anything overseas was handled through our head office in Wellington.
And that's where the Timona head office?
Yes, that was when they were taken over or bought out by Vestis.
And what year was that about? Would it be in the 70s?
No, I can remember Lord Vesti, or young Lord Vesti, Sam, as before he was the Lord. His father sent him out to learn the business from the UK, and Lord Vesti at the time said, oh, sort of, son, you're going to learn, and the first place you're going to go to is Timona. A couple of times I'd have to go through to the airport in Napier to pick them up in the cars. So,
and did they have cars for that sort of thing? You'd be driving and taking the car?
Sometimes it was whoever's available to take and pick them up.
So the basic head office at that stage was in Wellington?
It was in Wellington.
And then when Vestis took over, would they do direct to the company here?
No, well, still through Wellington. The Fletcher or the Vesti organisation, they had Timona Works, the Westfield Works in Auckland, Partia Works at Partia, and I think they had a share, they're definitely involved with the Kaiti Works in Gisborne.
And did they have any butcher shops of their own?
Yes, well, they had a butcher shop at the works itself. Westfield, I remember they had one at the gateway. Initially, the one was in the middle of the works, then they built a new one at the front gate at Timona.
So local people could go and buy there as well as the staff?
Yes.
And can you remember at all how much a price, say, of a side of hoggart or something
I can really remember. I still quote it to lots of people. You could buy a side of lamb in the butcher shop for 30 shillings. And you're lucky to buy
a sausage.
That's it.
And did you get many accidents or anything in the works?
No.
Or strikes?
There's a few strikes. I mean, in those days, any strike would be a nationwide strike, really. And the managers, I remember when I started there, Alec Kirkpatrick was a manager, and he had his finger on the pulse.
And then there was some other people that you know who still live around here. Could you tell us some of those people?
Well, one of the ones that and I was talking about, I'd had 12 months as office boy and then my successor came along. His name is Alan Edwards. He lives at Havelock North and he has quite an interest in Timona still.
Yes.
When I say an interest, he's been round to see me a couple of times and we discussed different staff members. Another, I suppose you'd call it an interesting thing. We've got another couple of ex-Timona people at Witherson Somerset, and
was Max one of them?
Max, yes. Max was in the butcher's shop.
He's Max Harris.
And there's Jean Mackay,
who's at the village as well.
Yes. I know when I started at Somerset, in my early coffee session, or in the evening I was, she said, I know you, Sid. And I had to, oops, I'm very embarrassed because, hello. And she said, we used to work together at Timona, and that's when I got it. Yeah, she was a typist. And also one of the new is Margaret Hooper, I think her name. Yeah. She hasn't long been there. She was in the office when I was there too.
So all up, how many people, say, when you first started, were working at Timona, and how many when you finished?
Averaged out. I know at the time of the closure, we used to employ 1,800 people in the season, but I'm just trying to think of the... I'd supposed to be about 1,500 when I first started there.
And if it's right in the season when you're doing the killing of the lambs and everything, it would be busier than normal. How many months would be busy and how many months would be slack?
I suppose you'd have about 2-3 months be on a 6-chain kill. And in the real off season, there's only one chain.
If you're on a chain, how many different workers would be, perhaps?
On the chain, I think it was a 32-man chain. And then, of course, you've got all the support work, and I'm afraid I can't.
Did they all have to wear the same uniform?
In those days, compared with now, I mean, no. Nowadays, you've got to be all in white. In those days, well, the men used to wear dungarees, you know, the jeans, and a black butcher's singlet, and gumboots.
No aprons or
anything? No. And in the colder weather, you'd have an old sports coat on or something just to keep you...
To keep you warm.
Yes. And if I may, at this stage, one of the chappies that worked on the chain there, he sent his jacket home for washing. And when he came back to work on the Monday, he had his nice clean jacket on. If it's a bit cold or something, put it on. And he went home and had a growling at his wife because after she washed it, she sewed the lining up inside.
Oh.
And of course, went to, oh, that's a nice lamb's fry, I'll have that. I opened this coat up, and
the
lining, it went straight down. But however, they had, you know, in the other areas, I mean, where they were working, processing the offals, they'd have aprons on, of course, and they're handing the wool. I mean, the wool used to be, once the skin was taken off of them, it'd go down to the level below, and it was painted, the inside, the pelt was painted, and left for 24 hours a day, and the next day the wool would be pulled right off
it.
And of course the wool was sorted and bagged and graded, and the pelts went down to be processed for pickling, and they were sent over, well, they called it pickling, preserved. Of course then the pelts were packed into barrels, they weren't salted,
so pickled in a brine.
Well, yes, they were washed, yes, to be pickled in a brine, and the tallow, anything that was from the boning room.
And did you make candles or anything like that? No, the tallow
was in barrels and sent to casks and sent away. They made the casks at the works, the barrels at the works, the wooden barrels, the staves. They'd bend them all and everything. So most of the, well, whatever was possible was made at the works.
Right from start to finish?
Yes.
And the small goods, they would all be made into offal that would be sold in the butcher shop?
Overseas export, I mean... When you're killing a couple of thousand lambs a day, I mean, you've got a couple of thousand. I mean, all the people in New Zealand, they wouldn't have eaten. So, oh no, they're all packed and frozen and exported overseas. And of course, in those days, the carcasses were all frozen. And when they were exported, they loaded into the railway wagons and went by train to Napier. And then they're unloaded out of the railway wagons into the slings that go up onto the boats and into the holds. And of course, nowadays, It's all containers.
So you've seen a huge turnaround in that too. Now, if you went
in
to work, did you have to punch in or out?
No.
What about the men on the chains?
Even on the chains, I mean, they
called
it, yes. The foreman would be going around, he'd know who was there because, I mean, every point had to be manned on the chain, and if somebody was off sick, somebody else was appointed.
Right. And did you have a smoker break?
Yes.
How many hours a day would the chain work?
The chain would start at 7:30. At 9:30, they'd have smoko till 9:45. Lunch was 12 to 1, an hour for lunch, and afternoon tea was 3 to 3:15, and they'd finish at 4:30. Well, when I say they finish at 4:30, they're going home at 4:30.
Did they have to have showers and that before they went? Because they did it Borthwick's.
Yes, the showers were there. Well, I think most of them didn't have showers because they wouldn't be allowed in home. There were, I know, some of the tradesmen for smoko. at 9:30, they would be sitting at the smoker room. They'd be around the work somewhere, and they'd make sure they were sitting there. And when the whistle went at 9:30, they'd picking up their cup to have a coffee. And when it went at quarter to ten, they'd be to put in the, and then go back to work. And when it was go home time, they were queued up at the gate waiting for the whistle to get. We noticed that especially because the office at Tamona was right just inside the gate. And it must be getting pretty close to queuing up.
To go back to the office piece, would they have had a time of the year when you had a lot of new people starting?
Well, from the office point of view, it was just continuous. With the chains and all around the works, I mean, that was seasonal. They come in and
go.
Yeah.
Now, the barrels that they made to send it away, where did they get the wood from?
It was for the tallow. It was white pine. The edibles was white pine. And they felt they'd imported. I don't know where they got the timber already, the stage. But for the white pine, they used to shape it. At the cooperage department, there's about 5 or 6 people working in there.
And the steel would have to come from overseas?
The steel.
On bands on it?
Yes. Big rolls. And then they'd cut it to length, the right length, and bend it. And, of course, it's shaped too. Mm. Apart from the circle, it had to be on a...
on an angle. And that would have to weigh on scales too?
No. Oh, the four casks here, everything, yes.
And as each stock unit came in, did it have to be weighed as well?
No, not when it's coming in. A farmer would send in 100 lambs or whatever.
But they didn't weigh them in and out?
No.
Because they do that now, apparently. Now, Sid's going to tell us a bit about his father and the Whakatū Freezing Works and his involvement with the fire brigade and a corner store.
When Mum and Dad shifted to Hastings here and they bought the corner store, Mum managed the store, which was a corner grocery nowadays, and Dad worked at Whakatū, went to Whakatū Freezing Works he was there as a night watchman. He used to have to bike to work every night or day, whatever shift he was on, and he was involved with the formation of the Whakatū Freezing Works Fire Brigade, carrying on from his involvement in Ellerslie. Both Dad and Granddad were in the Volunteer Fire Brigade. It was a volunteer brigade in Ellerslie in those days.
How many men would you have on the fire brigade?
At Tamona, I can go by that, we had about 15 men. They were all employed around the works, and of course, when there was a fire, initially they had the fire alarms around the works and bells would go, and that was just to advise the fire brigade, our own brigade, and we'd go and respond to it. And then later on, with work control OSH coming in, when the alarm went off, it was complete evacuation of all of the people. They had their assembly points, and we would have to carry on to get to the fire. When I first started at Tamona in the brigade, they had a Model T Ford. And when the early fires, when I was here, actually it was a nighttime fire, they couldn't get the Model T started. So in 1954, they bought the fire engine from Napier Fire Brigade, had one up for sale, and they bought it, and it was a 1935 V8, I think it was, Ford V8. And we were made, we were wrapped. They also had a trailer pump. And the lake at the moment, it was ideal having a good water supply. There's also a reticulated water supply. They had a big lake there. Mm. In fact, that was where the first swimming sports in Hastings were held, in the lake at Tamona. I don't know what year that was, but the ones have always commented on that.
Did you have a Christmas party for all the staff?
No. The office staff had a Christmas party every year, and management would take us up to the Hawke's Bay Farmers Tea Rooms, which was a lovely place for cakes and tea.
A children's Christmas party?
No, not for the kids through the firm itself, but with the fire brigade we had. Father Christmas used to come each year for the fire brigade. And another thing with the fire brigade we had, we were very involved with fire brigade competition work, and we had competitions at the Tamona Works. We had a track there. We used to go all around Hawke's Bay, and in fact competed in the national fire brigade competitions a few years.
So it was a complete way of life.
It was, really.
Did they have a library or anything like that?
No library.
Sick bay?
They had a first aid room, which was up the top floor, where they'd treat the blokes that had a little knife cut or a big knife cut or something like that. And we didn't have any ambulances as such there. But in those days, it was only a 111 call away. And I don't think the ambulances were heavily involved as they are nowadays.
How did they get to work? Mostly on their bikes?
Bikes or mainly.
Bikes.
Bikes. We had a big car park there too, but bikes. In fact, even before I went to Tomono, I worked at Tomono, I vaguely remember, I was at high school. Mm. It was during the war years, and at the back of the car park, they had the air raid shelters there. I can remember as a youngster, you know, running up and down those. On the top of them, well, Dad was judging or something of the fire brigade competitions with the Waka 2 Brigade.
We haven't treated the school much. Was there anything else outstanding with schooling at all?
No, it's just a, I suppose you'd say, I think I was average, but I wasn't involved in heavily in any sport. I played rugby on the Saturday afternoon rugby, but it wasn't up to the beginning of first or second 15, something like that. And cricket, no, I didn't take in any summer sport.
Scouts?
Scouts, yes, I joined the Frimley Scout group. Well, actually, I was a cub, and I did the cubs first and went up to the scouts. And I was involved, once again, just, yeah, I was a patrol leader at one stage, but I didn't go any further.
And what about your mum? Did she belong to Women's Institute?
No,
or
no.
Women's
mum,
Division?
No,
like
mum was a stay-at-home, I think. Yeah, well,
and in the corner store?
In the corner store. Mind you, the store wasn't open on a Saturday or Sunday. It was just a Monday to Friday.
Oh, and how long did they have that store for?
They sold that in 1982, she sold it. That's how long she had the store for.
So we've covered the drama societies. If you went back and did it all again, would you still do everything?
I think I would.
So it's a good life.
That's right.
Yes.
But I'm now at the stage, being an 80-year-old, I just want to
retire.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Sid, for a very interesting outline of what happened. And we'll end it there.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.